Okay.
I want to welcome
Yum.
everybody to the world according to that man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to welcome the rumblers, the ranters, the truthers, and remind everybody, benstein.substack.com. And I want to thank everybody. You got Ben, over 100,000 followers on Truth Social.
Oh, yum.
From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. And you've gotten our podcast, which we do no advertising. We spend no money. We make no money. Into the top, mid-tops hundreds on news and commentary on all of Apple Podcasts. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. It's word of mouth. It's
we are grateful. We are humbly grateful.
We truly are. And
over the humbly week, grateful.
Ben's son got married in South Carolina. We got to meet a couple of our fans, and it was a true honor to meet Luke and his family and the DJ and everybody. Thank you, everybody. We couldn't do it without you, and we don't want to do it without you. We have a fun filled show tonight. Joining again, Mandy Gunasekera from
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. Mandy is make the announcement. You're running.
Yeah. What? Yes, I officially launched my run for public service commissioner in Mississippi for the Northern District. So, it's been a long time coming, but I'm very excited to take out somebody who's making really bad decisions, setting up an area of the state that's experienced significant growth up for problems in the future. So I'm going to go after him and fix that.
God bless you.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. Again, we appear to be always be having problems with our Rumble channel. And for the first time, we are joined tonight by Gabrielle Hoffman. She's a senior fellow at the Independence Women Forum and a freelance media strategist, award-winning writer at townhall.com, political columnist, and she hosts the District of a Conversation podcast, CFACT. Welcome to the world, according to Ben Stein.
It's good to be in your world. Thank you for having me this evening.
We are honored.
We are truly honored that you are with us. I have no idea why the live stream cut out.
I want to know where in Alexandria you live.
I don't want to reveal my exact location.
Well,
because
obviously not.
But you know, in a nice area, I can say that. Not exactly in the city, but where there's a mix of peace and quiet, but still close to downtown.
Well, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you.
God bless you. And
where are you from? I want to find out more about it. She's our guest. Where are you from? Where are you from?
California originally. I'm actually from Orange County.
Very good. And where did you go to school?
UC San Diego, proud Triton, class of 2012 here.
Very good.
I escaped, though, afterwards for four-year pastors.
What do you mean you escaped?
Well, I kind of saw the writing on the wall in California. I hate to abandon my home state, but for me, it was really hard to kind of forecast my future as a young person in 2012. Still, obviously, a lot of us then were reeling in from the recession of 2008. And I didn't really see any bright prospects for me. It wasn't because I wasn't talented or capable enough, but it was really limited opportunities for what I wanted to do. And so I looked to Washington, D.C. to do a reporting internship with the Media Research Center. And from there, it grew into different opportunities. So I landed an opportunity and I figured I better chart my adult course on the East Coast.
Very good. How do you like being on the East Coast?
It's a different change. You know, I've been here for a decade now, and it's totally different from what I grew up with. Obviously, I spent 2/3 of my young life still in California, my formative years there, because I'm the daughter of immigrants who fled the Soviet Union. And I was the first in my immediate family born in the U.S. So it was kind of cool to grow up there.
So
they have
a
unique perspective. And I got to grow up with a unique worldview. Obviously, I learned to love liberty from an early age. It kind of passed through my bloodstream. And I recognized, you know, certain ideas work better than others. And that's kind of what solidified my conservative views. Even today, I've always been very conservative. I think college made me even more conservative. And in recent years, certain politicians and their machinations have made me even increasingly more conservative. But I've kind of retooled my packaging of how I market conservatism to different audiences. And I tried to, along with Mandy, with our work at IWF, we tried to appeal to a lot of women who may not think exactly like us, but may sympathize on some of the issues that we all work on. And so to go from California to Virginia, it's a change. I miss the ocean, but I'm actually pretty content with who I have as governor now. And I'm optimistic about Virginia moving forward in a sane direction with the leadership that we have here. And it is disappointing, but actually California kind of brought some glimmers with some of the elections, which I know we'll go into detail with, and I won't talk so much more about my background, but yeah, California can be disappointing at times, and other times it can be really pleasing and delivering of good results, as I'm starting to see now with some of the election returns. So I'm proud to have hailed from there. It's, you know, made me who I am, and it helped me, you know, kind of stand out in the DC area, because a lot of people are kind of stiff here. And so coming from California, from a more relaxed background, I can kind of blend and adjust and kind of stay afloat in this pretty tough place.
Very wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, you're the boss, Judah.
We are having a few issues with the live stream, so I'm going to continue recording regular, and I'm setting up a new live stream. So, and by the way, for the people that listen on, all the people that listen on down, that download, please come to the show and subscribe to on Rumble to Ben Stein. Now, Ben, obviously, we've had a lot of things. And before I get to the announcement, I still have to get to this thing of the Republicans winning by 5 million votes in
the
election.
That's the best story ever.
And I was discussing this with Mandy the other night, and she said you really have to do an op-ed on this, because coming from you, it means more than from other people, the absolute statistical, let's say, implausibility of winning by 5 million votes, yet winning the governorship in Nevada, losing seats, losing the Senate, the slow roll that happened in Maricopa County, and the slow roll that continues to go on as they're doing the counting, Ben.
Well, we know that the whole thing is as crooked as it can be. I think we're getting used to a very sad story that our glorious America that I grew up with, I'm as old as all of you put together, isn't here anymore. I mean, we're now have America basically run by loan sharks and gangsters. But it's still wonderful. It's still the best place in the world. But we are now seeing that things which, as a statistician, I would say are impossible, are happening. And when that happens, it generally means there's some crookedness involved. It's sort of like if you were at a casino and you saw a person roll snake eyes over and over and over again, or 20 times in a row, you would think, are these dice really fair? You might at least start to think about that. So we think about that now. And if you have had a casino where one of the players was the nephew of the owner of the casino, and he rolled a winner every time, 50 times in a row, and someone went to the owner of the casino and said, could you look into this? And the owner of the casino said, no, nothing fine, nothing strange here, perfectly fine. That's sort of like what we're having here. And as Judith's been so kind as to point out, I did a fair amount of work in statistics, and what I'm seeing happen is just not, it's not possible. It's just not possible if you're playing with a straight deck, but I don't think we're playing with a straight deck.
I agree with you 100%. I don't know what the heck is going on with Rumble. The problem is probably President Trump is speaking. So I'll have to upload the video after. I should not have deleted it in the first place, but there you are. I'll go to Gabby first because she's the first time here. Gabby, Ben brings a great point that this was a casino. The pit boss would be coming out and checking the cards. People would be getting banned for life from that casino because the numbers, there's hitting in, when Trump first ran, I remember he had, everybody said they have to hit in the straight flush. He has to hit the inside or whatever it was. This is more, they've done more than hit the straight flush. They turned everything blue in certain parts of America that it's a statistical impossibility.
It's not a statistical impossibility. It's just extremely, extremely unlikely. And for it to happen over and over again is really unlikely. And for it to happen over and over and over again, and for no one in a position of authority to say something questionable is going on here, That's really unlikely. And yet it's happening. And that is a terribly, terribly sad commentary on our glorious America, the best place in the world.
What say you, Gabby?
Arizona is an interesting place. And I'm not sure what to make of how the electoral returns are going. Although I am seeing the increasing evidence for the split ticket voting. I know some people may not like hearing that, but I've been talking to some Arizonans. Some elected officials privately have talked to me about what's happening and kind of how they want to recalibrate. And they saw that certain candidates did win who had the Republican R next to their name, and then some who didn't. And there's different reasons for that. There's also a growing share of independents, registered independents, who did a lot of split ticketing. They may have left the governor's name blank, but they may have voted for the treasurer, or maybe they voted for Katie Hobbs, or they voted for the Republican treasurer and then down ballot. So we do start to see that as well. It is crazy that it takes a week or weeks upon end for them to have results tallied. And I think everyone can agree with that. But I also think, going back to the California question, I think a lot of people have fled California, may have brought their voting habits with them to Arizona, to a place like that. And I think that's starting to show with independents and even maybe some Republicans who crossed over to Democrat, and even Democrats who are now voting more actively, thinking that they have shots of winning. And so I think it could be a multitude of factors, but I think it's kind of similar to Georgia, where they've seen a huge growth in population. And a lot of those are people who are probably voting with their feet, but not voting necessarily in the right way. That's kind of how I look into it. And there's going to be some discussion about candidate quality and all that. And they haven't really had some good leadership at the state level, too. They've kind of been focused on relitigating the past. A lot of people kind of are looking for normalcy to come back, people who offer a positive vision as well. And so I think in the case of Arizona, certainly some questions do arise there, but I kind of tend to believe that some different trends are playing out, unfortunately, to the disadvantage of Republicans. And they're going to have to think, how do you win? Do you get involved in the vote early, vote by mail game? A lot of people all across the board have said that we have to be competitive using those tactics going forward. So that's kind of my view into it. You guys may disagree, but that's kind of what I see on the Arizona front in particular.
5 million votes, you know.
and Mandy, I to Ben's point of the 5 million votes, and I get what Gabriella is saying. I do, but it doesn't. Listen, I got my California ballot. Half of it, and Ben could attest to this. About at least half of the candidates that we had to vote for, we didn't even have a choice between a Republican or a Democrat. It was all Democrats that we were voting for. But for the most part, most people do vote down ballot. The down ballot vote it's just what most people do, Mandy. Maybe I'm mistaken, and there are people that are really deep diving into things. But Mandy, what's your thought on that?
Well, I think one thing I would strongly encourage you, Ben, to write this op-ed that we were discussing on your behalf the other night, Judah and I. But I think it would be really helpful if this could be presented in a very simple form, because I guarantee you, and I'm happy to help send this to folks on Capitol Hill, but they need to point to overarching statistical trends that are problematic. And I think you are best suited to explain that to help them back up what some may allege is anecdotal evidence of fraud or.
Wait a second. It's all anecdotal evidence. I mean, this is an anecdotal game. I mean, it's all anecdotal unless you get someone from the Democrat Party who confesses. It's all going to be anecdotal. I mean, in any election, where on the election night, suddenly a huge number of ballots stop being counted and disappear, that's an anecdote. But it's an anecdote that shows something. It's not, occasionally I run into people who say, such and such happened, and that proves that, let's say, home prices are going down in Beverly Hills. Maybe so. But if you have this thing happen over and over and over and over again, Then it's more than an anecdote, and it shows something. I mean, do you, Gabrielle, really not think that it shows something questionable, that there are so many more Republican votes than Democrat votes, and yet the Republicans did not win Congress by a decisive amount?
I don't, if I'm not mistaken, we don't do the popular vote in terms of midterm elections either, and same with presidential. So I'm not sure.
Of course I understand that.
You know, yeah.
Of course I understand, but is it not a bit unusual for a party to have an enormous preponderance of the popular vote and still not win the Congress by a substantial amount? Is that not unusual?
It is unusual. We have to see if those so-called registered Republicans crossed over to vote Democrat. I think maybe that's where they're getting the excess numbers. I'm not an expert and I can't really speak to that. But it is suspect, but I really don't know if it's smart for Republicans to kind of harp on, let's say, 2020 or relitigating certain things. I think that's largely why a lot of Arizona voters
Why isn't that smart? If we see evidence of fraud, or what seems like very likely evidence of fraud, why is it not smart to bring that to the attention of the media, for as if they gave a damn, and to the voters? Why isn't that itself a huge issue? If America has stopped being America as we anticipated under the Constitution, is that not a very important thing to bring to the attention of the voters?
I remember when they were trying to do this after the November 2020 election, and there was lots of talks about court cases and lawsuits. And when it was brought before a court, none of those people came before to testify. And it was really hard for them to prove that there was evidence. And so I think back to the election, because I want to focus largely on that, because I'm not here to talk about that. I'm not an election analyst with respect to, or rather not a data analyst, but I want to talk about why we are seeing these surprising results in reliably red states like Arizona, or kind of the split voting happening in Georgia. And we do have to come to grips with that. Some people are now, I don't know for what reason, split ticket voting. They're voting for Republicans as governor, but they're not voting for Republicans for senator. I'm not sure what goes into their calculation for voting for that, but we do see an increasing number of people. And if, let's say, in Arizona, it comes down to that, I mean, people can hash out what they want to do there. But it's been run by Republicans, and Doug Ducey won pretty decisively only 4 years ago. It wasn't a problem when he first ran for office, and the second time that he ran for office. So I'm not sure what exactly went down in 2020 in this most recent election. But Republicans have largely been in charge, so I'm not sure what is going on. And I thought Katie Hobbs should have recused herself overseeing this election. I think anyone can agree with that. But like I said, I think we are seeing people split ticket, and some people that I trust in Arizona, and they may not like Katie Hobbs as well, but they were saying that she turned off a lot of voters. I know McCain is not really a reliable conservative, but a lot of people still like him there. It's an indisputable fact. And she kind of alienated that vote. A lot of independents who would be potentially swayable. And so I think we're going to see that more so than accusations of fraud, because let's say she's challenging it and she claims that there's fraud and she doesn't show for it, she's going to mislead people and lead people on, I think. And so it will come down to look at the actual voter trends, because it can't just be that Republicans win, the state treasurer won a resounding second term to her position, and then Republicans mysteriously lost. I think, like I said, split ticket voting is happening more often, and we have to be accepting of that.
No, you see, but here's to I'll get to Mandy in a second, because her point is split ticketing voting is happening. It only seems to be happening, though, Ben, with Republicans.
And split ticket voting has always happened. Split ticket voting is not that unusual. There was split ticket voting in 1940. There was split ticket voting in a big way in 1948. But as Judah points out, it is odd that the split ticket voting seems to go against Republicans so consistently. That is not a usual statistical expectation that one would have.
And Mandy, I'll go to you with this on this one, because listen, I understand and I respect Gabriella's point of view. I do. I get it. I think this is where we're at the crossroads of how to move on, but at the same time, we have to focus on on anomalies. Because if we move on without focusing on the anomalies, where do we go, and where do we get? How do we move on when every ballot dump that happens at 8 o'clock at night, how come the ballot dumping happens after all the news organizations are shut down? How come the ballot dumping doesn't happen at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m.? Every single ballot dump, when it's at 94%, goes to 100%, 99% in Democrats' favor.
Well, why is it? Yeah, I was going to say, why do we not, are we not seeing ballot dumping so that, surprise, surprise, a Democrat is ahead, and then at the end of the day, a Republican is ahead? Why are we not seeing that? I mean, the ballot dumping and split ticketing. So I agree, split ticketing, not at all unusual, not the slightest bit unusual. But for split ticketing to consistently, excuse me, favor one party, that seems a bit unusual. That should not, as a matter of statistics, happen.
I agree. I think two things is, we need to do a data-driven analysis, and that's why I think pointing out anomalies, even in the anecdotal sense, but putting it in the big picture, I think that's really important for purposes of shaping the investigatory conversation that will happen on Capitol Hill. You better believe that with the folks who are about to take over judiciary and oversight. But I also think it's really important for answering to the voters. I've run into so many people, and I started my campaign officially yesterday, but I've been talking to folks trying to raise money, and I get a constant question. I'd like to give you money, but I've given money in the past and it seems like the system is rigged. And people aren't saying that to be offensive. They are genuinely concerned, and they have major questions about the integrity of their vote and the integrity of the system surrounding it. So I do think it's important to not look at it, Gabriella. I do think, to the point, it's important that we don't just focus on that, because for elections and for the opportunity we now have before us in the House, we've got to focus on the future and setting right some policies that are causing Americans some very real harm. So that needs to be taken seriously. But we've got to get to the bottom of these, excuse me, anomalies that have called Hester. Hold on.
When are you okay?
Yeah, I just had like one of those dry spots, but I'll finish this.
Why don't you go get a Diet Pepsi and come back?
Well, our own voters to question the integrity of their of the vote and whether it matters for them.
That, to me, that is an anecdote. We're talking about anecdotes. But why are these anecdotes coming up consistently in favor of one party as well? And why are they coming up consistently in favor of one ethnicity? So that question haunts me. If it's really random, if it's randomized, then it should be coming up pretty much according to the registration in the country. And it's not.
This is one of those things, and I understand.
Well, it's like everything is one of those things.
I'm also trying to focus on trying to get our live stream up, which, because President Trump has been speaking on Rumble, apparently Rumble is totally incapable of handling multiple things. But I wanted to get to this idea of a commission, because at this point, we're at a crossroads in the Republican Party, because a lot of Republicans are going to and have lost faith in the system. And I bring up their needing. We have so many investigations. We have so many. I'm simply talking about something like the Knapp Commission or different forms of commissions, Ben, that have been set up through time to check, to do an honest. It could take 6 months right now, a year, to just do a deep dive check.
Have
a bipartisan committee that everybody trusts. And Gabby, it's just, I don't think that's a terrible idea. And the reason why Mandy brought up Gabby about with Ben is because we're the farthest people from thinking these sorts of things. The anomalies we just see to people like us are quite irregular. So, and if we think like that, many other people are thinking like that, and that it really truly is an issue.
Well, I think if you look at the efforts of Georgia and other states where they have tried to reform election integrity laws, I think that's the future. It was resolved. They had a lot of turnout for votes. May not be a perfect system, but I think most people were pretty content. I know there's been chatter of a bipartisan commission to look into this, to see if there are irregularities in the system. But I think, like I said, I think most people do want to know, you know, how are you going to govern in the future? And I think a lot of voters, especially in the swing states, were kind of turned off by those who were trying to relitigate past elections. And this is, I'm trying to be practical.
How do you have any idea of that? I mean, you just made that up.
I've talked to a lot of people in Arizona.
How many people have you talked to?
I've talked to a handful of people who were reelected.
What's the population of Arizona?
Couple million people. I haven't talked to all Arizonans, but just the small sampling. And I've talked to people in the Ducey administration. I've talked to Republicans that were reelected resoundingly into the state legislature. And the same echoing I heard from all of them was this issue that, not to say that it's a distraction, but some people said they want to address, obviously, reforming elections so you don't have this holdover with counting. And that's, I think, what everyone can agree with, that you can tabulate the votes. But a lot of people who were talking about 2022, Carrie Lake, for instance, she turned off a lot of people from voting compared to, let's say, another Republican holder on that ballot. And I know we're rehashing this, and I hope we could talk about more election analysis too. But I'm seeing increasingly in that state, that's why. It's not because Arizonans automatically became a far left state, but I think, I'm not sure if Democrats are encouraging people, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist by any means, but I think Democrats do like to meddle in Republican, not only primaries, maybe they're meddling in general elections too. I'm not entirely sure if that could explain the split ticket voting, if it's an anomaly and it keeps repeatedly happening. But I think people say that, okay, Republicans easier to vote for them, or I live in a red state, it's much easier to vote as a Republican. Maybe I'll just do this, or perhaps they strongly believe that. I'm not sure. But I, like I said, we're also in a very divided country. So I think people will split ticket their vote and do that. But like I said, locally, one elected official told me that in his county, he wants to enact and do some reforms without necessarily placating some of the conspiracies that have come out with 2020 and such, but making sure that elections are tabulated quicker. They know the results the night of or immediately the next day after. And I think that's where people can come about and agree on those terms. But I think some people who were hearkening back, especially to 2020, they didn't do well. Analysis that is coming out all across the board is from different states in the Midwest to some in the Southeast, all those who were harping largely on 2020 didn't win. The candidates who were talking about general election integrity, you know, voter ID, et cetera, securing the vote and all that, they won while also painting a vision for the future. So Carrie Lake, for instance, was seen as just a person rehashing the past. That's what, unfortunately, she fell victim to a lot of media caricatures, even though she was an articulate speaker. I just see that she was easy to misrepresent and voters didn't take her message, even though she had other ideas too. She was just too focused on the past.
Okay, so
I would love to know how you know that.
Well, no, I mean, I understand what she's saying.
You get Ms. Ashwin,
Ben, I understand what she's saying. I mean,
I understand what she's saying, but it has no statistical validity whatsoever.
Right, but the problem, we're going to switch subjects in a second. The problem, though, Mandy, with what Gabby's saying, and I understand that, obviously, is Trafalgar, another anomaly is Trafalgar is known as the most accurate polling group there is, and so is Rasmussen, and they, for instance, had Carrie Lake up by 3 points. Now, I get that that's within the margin of error, but that is, I think they had her up by more. They had Laxalt up by 3. They had, these are some of the best, but Trafalgar has been the best polling group easily of the past 10 years, and Rasmussen has been fairly accurate, really accurate. And for them to be so off, it's just curious to me. And until we could figure this out, maybe we get rid of polling. I for one think we the Republicans, and Peter Thiel is probably the only person that could do this, is really wage a war on wait the vote and create a movement of wait to vote. Don't vote until you hear the candidates debate. And I've been saying this because by the time candidates debate in Pennsylvania, 70% of the people had voted. 70% couldn't see that that Fetterman was a vegetable.
Yeah, this whole move away from debating it's fundamentally anti-democratic, and it really bothers me. So I think in the wait to vote campaign, there should also be a commitment to have earlier debates and multiple debates. I don't think voters should have one shot to see how their preferred or not preferred candidate performs when asked questions face to face to the relative opponent. But back to the polling. Hey, I'm all for getting rid of polling. I mean, I think that would make life a lot simpler and a lot less of a roller coaster, emotionally speaking, leading up to the elections. But it's such big business. We know it's not going to go away. But I do think, I was thinking, why was I suddenly so optimistic? I know how to measure myself. I know that naturally I'm very optimistic when I look at these things because I want to win and I believe in it. So I'm naturally very skeptical when I get to that point. And I was very skeptical of our chances in the Senate and some of these races up until about six, eight weeks ago. And I was been talking to a lot of friends, some that are a part of the quote unquote consultant class in Washington, D.C. But, you know, it really goes back to when these polls, like you mentioned, Judah, that historically put Republicans at a disadvantage showed something different. And maybe they were meddled with, you know, maybe there's something bigger than that. But something was showing up in polls that historically don't favor Republicans. We all rightfully got excited and then were extremely surprised on the day of when things didn't turn out the way that we had expected it to. And not only us, the people who measure this stuff closely and accounting for their discrepancies with purported outcomes, it was really way off. And that's why we were all caught up in this optimism and this expectation of red wave or tsunami.
Well, then there you have something that is not simply an anecdote. I mean, there you have something which is genuinely surprising statistically. If you have some kind of statistical data that tells you that something is going to happen, and it doesn't happen consistently in a very large country such as the United States, 344 million people, then I think there's time for us to question. And the idea of saying we shouldn't look backwards, why not? I mean, it's a hell of a big issue. Whether or not the Constitution is being followed is a hell of a big issue. My colleagues here know, I'm just obsessed with the idea that out of nowhere, Mr. Biden said there couldn't be any more fracking. And from that followed a chain of disasters, wildly higher gasoline and oil prices, wildly higher natural gas prices, a generalized inflation throughout the society, very, very serious and dangerous dependence on Russia for oil. It seems to me that's a giant subject, but it's not a bigger subject than whether or not the Constitution is being followed.
Okay, yeah, well said, all of you. And listen, for everybody listening, we love discourse on this show.
We love it.
We encourage it. And as Ben has often said, debate is the essence of America. And this is truly going to be a debate that the conservative and the Republican Party has. I'll close this off with one thing, just to use real data. 538, which is run by Nate Silver, which is an aggregate site. If you would have looked a month and a half ago, Republicans had a 31 out of 100 chance of taking back the Senate. Within a month and a half time, it went to 58 out of 100. If you would have looked, let's say 2 months ago, it was maybe 70-30 Republicans taking back the House. And that's a huge amount. I'm saying then it went to like 86 out of 100. When you look at the betting odds that night of Republicans taking control of the House, it was 80% in their favor. The fact that we're sitting here a week later and we do not know, and it goes to what I say, release all the results at the same time. It is a sure way to avoid this massive mess we're in. Like I said, this isn't a sporting event where we're watching the scores go up and the scores, whatever it is. Why not just to keep it safe, not release the vote that until all the votes are counted?
Well, that's a reason, because I mean, things happen for a reason. The reason is because the Democrats want to know how many votes they need to win. And I mean, it's well known, if I may say so. I think it's well known, maybe it's not well known, that when Lyndon Johnson and John F. Kennedy were running for vice president and president, Mayor Daley came to Lyndon Johnson and said, "Well, how many votes do you need to take Illinois?" And that was how that was determined. That's why we got John F. Kennedy as president. So, I mean, there's a reason why politicians are somewhat suspect as human beings.
Well said. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. Obviously, the most of you listening to this via podcast, you're not interested in the fact that Rumble's down, but Rumble's down because President Trump has decided to make the announcement. We are joined tonight for the first time by Gabby Hoffman. Please say exactly, you're a senior fellow at where?
Independent Women's Forum and a holder of too many titles.
Thank you very much for saying that. And I always get that. And Mandy Gunasekera, I know you work at the same organization. You have a big job, former EPA with the Trump administration. You're running for your own thing now. You're a wife. You have tons going on. And just the fact that you're willing to join us tonight means the world to us. And I want to thank Gabby.
We are very grateful. And to you, Gabby, I'm sure I have a very, very busy day
And thank Gabby for introducing us to Mandy. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. But Ben, I got to get to this because I brought this up last week, and it goes to the Trump thing, the Trump announcement. And it goes to people willing to use their political capital, willing to do whatever it took. And the way I look at DeSantis, he's an amazing governor. He is. There's no doubt. He's been a great governor.
Fabulous.
A fabulous governor. But for months, I was saying, when Jack Posobiec was on the show, interestingly enough, the next day, all of a sudden, DeSantis started campaigning for people. If he was that popular of a public figure in the Republican national circles, why was he not on the ground in those states? The same could be said for Brian Kemp stumping for Herschel Walker, DeSantis stumping. And as Trump makes this announcement tonight, the reality is, the Trump base is going to stay loyal to him. They're not going to leave. If DeSantis runs, God bless him, he'll get some of the Trump base, but he's not going to get enough. And if Trump wants to win or bring down the House and be the sacrificial lamb, I say God bless him. I'm supporting him. I know you are, Ben Stein. Let him do it.
But I think it's a little more complicated than that. I mean, if his doing it against a very popular guy like DeSantis means that the Republicans lose the 2024 election, it's an extremely serious measure.
I'm simply saying if he decides to run, not Trump decides to run, he already did, but DeSantis running, it's like DeSantis is our prize stallion. I think we could probably all agree he's
a prize.
Yeah, he's a prize stallion. I wouldn't run our prize stallion in an election cycle like this in 2 years. That's just my humble opinion. I don't think he's there yet. I could be wrong on a national scale. And let's not forget, if we are to believe that abortion played a major role, the media narrative will have him as the anti-gay guy, and again with the gay bill or whatever they wanted to call it, and that. So Ben, I'm grateful that President Trump announced his election candidacy tonight. I think it takes a lot of guts to do what he's doing, and we could see investigations starting within a week and a half.
Well, I don't know when Congress takes the oath, frankly. So I don't know what day that is. Maybe one of our young ladies here does. But why shouldn't the investigation start right away? I mean, we've seen some incredibly
horrible things. No, I meant it to Trump.
We've seen some, but we've seen some incredibly horrible abuse of the law enforcement mechanism of the federal government in the last couple of years. And I'd like to see what our, I'd like to see an investigation of that as soon as conceivably possible. I mean, this is a really scary thing, the way the FBI has become pretty, at least to me, and I may be wrong, pretty unequivocally a political weapon against the Republican Party. And I think an investigation of that immediately is very much in order.
I agree with you 100%. And Gabby, to my point, there's 2 points. So DeSantis is, I mean, we all could say DeSantis is a phenomenal governor. We have some phenomenal governors like Abbott. And he is right now our prize stallion. Nobody else that they keep on floating their names comes close to DeSantis. But I still can't get past the fact, and I brought this up for months, that he didn't use his political, he did not use his political capital to advance other Republicans. And he couldn't. And my question on last week's show was, could, before, and I asked this, or Gabby was on, and Mandy was on, and I said to her, if, let's say Laxalt had won, would, and I've asked this question anecdotally like you to other people, and I said, if DeSantis were to stump for Walker, would he win? And nobody was able to say to me 100%. They weren't even able to, they stuttered every time. They paused every time I asked that question, Gabby.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I have no really insight into whether or not he's running. I've actually disagreed with some conservatives as to whether or not it is his time. Although I think the primary, we may see some challenges to Trump, and I think a debate could be healthy and maybe make him stronger and not see him do friendly fire on against other like-minded conservatives. But I think if Trump, you know, he runs, I don't know what obstacles he will face. I think I've seen the reporting that says that he really won't be able to be investigated with him running for office. So maybe this is why he's running right now and early and getting ahead of it. And he certainly wants the party to coalesce behind him. But we probably will see some challenges to him. Maybe some people want, you know, him to sharpen up a little bit and to really be focused and with the stuff ahead. And to your question about whether or not he could help elevate Herschel a bit, he did stump a little bit across the country, not as much as Governor Youngkin and other Republican governors or surrogates did. And I'm not sure what his decision was. Obviously, in September, he had to deal with the hurricane. So that could have been one thing. But maybe he could have stumped a little bit more for some of the surrogates. That's up to him.
That was a week. But that was a week. That was a week and a half that he had to deal with the hurricane. We're talking about 4 or 5 months ago that he could have been. I mean, Jack Posobiec, I think, was on the program at least 4 or 5 months ago. And I brought up this point, and then all of a sudden he went out with Turning Point USA. And my biggest question, Mandy, on this is, I get it. He's done amazing things in Florida, but this idea that he's the one that turned it red, or Ohio red, is the great red law. Trump turned those two states officially red. And we can't forget what he did. When he gets out there, there is something different. As I said the other night, he was able to break the fourth wall. He was able to break the media, and he was able to bypass the media with Twitter, which DeSantis and none of these people could do. And it's time. So, Mandy, yes, I go to you.
I read a lot about the Trump bump, as a lot of folks called it, when he would go in. But there's something about him when he goes into places, he can sway elections. I do think it is appropriate to give him credit for making Ohio and Florida the solid red states that they are. I mean, it was a lot of him going in there, engaging with parts of the state that weren't used to someone, well, a Republican coming in, and then especially someone coming in the way that he does, and just do his style of straight talk that either turns people on or turns people off. But to Gabby's point on the primary, I do think we'll see another very exciting primary on the Republican side. I get the sense Mike Pompeo is going to jump in. You get the sense that Nikki Haley's going to jump in. I mean, they haven't been building some of these apparatuses. Is that a word? Apparatuses they haven't been building them just to sit idly by for another 4 years. I do get the sense that they're going to be jumping in at some point. So we're going to have a very competitive primary process that the strongest man or woman will win. And right now, the person to beat, if anyone is willing to take on that challenge, is President Trump, because he stands at the top of the Republican Party. He's done so much to grow us and expand the number of folks that affiliate with our party. And I think that's a good thing. Yeah, you can, there's factions that don't like him because of his style, and there's factions that still are offended by some of the tweets that he put out. But I think largely speaking, he expanded what the Republican Party is and who feels like they can be a part of it, which is very important. And that momentum is hard to replicate, even if you're a DeSantis, I think.
Yeah,
I asked a respectful question. Gabriella, do you know Herschel Walker?
I don't personally know.
You've never met him?
No.
Why do you call him by his first name?
Because in politics, I think everything is so informal. I mean, I could call him Mr. Walker. You know, that's what I do whenever I interview politicians. But Herschel Walker, I think everyone does that kind of an informal basis. But if I met him, I would address him, you know, Mr. Herschel Walker. I was raised to do that. But no, I don't know him personally.
But I just wonder, because I just am mystified why people call Black politicians by their first names and not white politicians by their first names. But I may be being way too sensitive about this, because I generally am not at all sensitive about this subject. But I think calling a very, very big time politician by his first name, if you've never even met him, is to me very questionable. But you have every bit as much right to do it as anyone else in the world.
What's funny, I'm trying to think to myself now I'm gonna have to go to the list through the list in my head of people who I call what, but I want to get back to this because I think this is another important issue moving forward, and that's the Ben's point of what do we do now. So let's say we take the House. Do we start immediate investigations of the DOJ, the FBI? Because as we all know, there are already Republicans saying Maybe we shouldn't go full bore. Maybe we shouldn't investigate Hunter. Maybe we shouldn't investigate. And I happen to think you have to do it, because if you don't do it, you will get trounced in the next. If you think this was tight, this election, if Republicans do not investigate the FBI, the DOJ, and these other organizations, you might as well call it game, set, match in 2020.
I might as well just say there's no more two-party system.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And Gabby, to that point, it's I get it. I think we sort of do have to do these investigations, and they'll be uncomfortable. But listen, we've been under investigation for since Richard Nixon, at least.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why is it that they are allowed? The other side. Are allowed to investigate, say incredibly nasty things about the Republicans, incredibly nasty, horrible things, and we're not allowed to.
Because they are fortunate to have progressive privilege. They're immune from criticism, they're immune from investigations, they're immune from any wrongdoing,
Well, it's wrong.
Of course, I agree.
Then that's wrong. So now we have identified an extremely strong point in the favor of the Republican Party, which is that the media, which a very, very, very smart friend of mine calls the fourth branch of the Third Reich, is a very, very, very untrustworthy entity. And I'm sorry to say, so is law enforcement.
And the question, Gabby, though, is, would you go after them?
I think Republican voters are expecting Kevin McCarthy, incoming House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, because today's votes indicate that he will likely hold that title. And I expect him to replicate, not saying I favor or disfavor him, but he's expected to also win it in the procedural vote that's supposed to happen when the new Congress takes place. But he has said, I guess, that he would permit that. I know the more conservative members, probably some of the House Freedom Caucus members, will demand that there are investigations into the FBI's misconduct into Hunter Biden. If you're promising that, you should deliver it. I think that's what Republicans want. And I've been tracking elections. I got really involved in, I paid attention in 2010 and 2012 and 2014. And I remember when we gained big majorities in the House and even in the Senate, it was kind of lackluster. We saw a lot of intra-party fighting between John Boehner and the more conservative wing of the Republican Party. We got some gains in Paul Ryan, too. It was disappointing towards the end of his tenure. He wasn't wanting to help advance some of Trump's agenda items across the board. And he ultimately resigned because he didn't want to help. And he created a distraction. And then obviously, because of electoral trends, 2018, the party out of power usually takes over. And so he kind of foresaw that and really didn't want to help Trump enact his agenda for sure. And Republicans that were elected as well. And so we've seen this history before. And if they don't deliver on certain things, I'm not sure if impeachment per se would be against President Biden is the wisest thing, but at least the investigations, you have more credibility to do that. There's more evidence supporting that. And I think at minimum, you'll see those happen. And especially questioning about the IRS. In terms of hiring 86,000 agents, there definitely has to be debate over that and any other wrongdoing. I mean, even with his, I think they can even investigate maybe in the Energy and Commerce Committee about his calls with Saudi Arabia in terms of trying to negotiate more oil reserves and all. So that's
exactly right.
It's a very, very suspect thing that he did. And if it was a Republican doing that, they'd be demanding impeachment altogether. But at minimum, investigating some of the questionable calls, what he's done to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and just our energy policy.
That is so incredibly important, Gabby. That is so incredibly important. I mean, the danger he has put this country in by depleting the Strategic Petroleum Reserve instead of letting the free market operate in hydrocarbons is almost, this is just me, I'm nobody. It's treason.
Yeah, well said. And how enjoyable, Gabby, Mandy, would it be if, I mean, I know Grassley won't be doing the investigations because he doesn't have the Senate. Maybe his committee could still do it. But as Gabby was talking about investigations, all I could think of is open up Hunter's laptop. Just open it up. That would be the greatest theater in the world. Most media organizations probably wouldn't cover it. You'd have to blurb, you know, put like a black thing on the computer. But Mandy, how great would it be if one of those congressmen just got up there and just started, they just started saying, so Hunter Biden, and they use Peter Schweizer's book or whatever it is, and open the damn laptop and say, we've had this for, 3 years at this point? The FBI, we know, covered it up and really have investigations every day. It's not like when you have 218 and they have the Senate, anything's going to be done anyway. You might as well do it.
Yeah, that's right. And the House is well suited for that type of investigation. I'll say, look, at the House and the Senate, they can still do joint committee hearings, even with the minority party. So they can use the resources that Senator Grassley himself and then his staff that is just top notch. And Ron Johnson, we have some really great investigators over in the Senate side, and they can absolutely share resources. And I'm going to be encouraging them to think about those sorts of things. But yeah, hey, look, the benefit of that too, they would create a heavily watched show and not have to hire an ABC News producer to come in and actually try to make it entertaining, like we saw with January 6th. So but I think, look, a little below the belt investigating, that's what some voters want to see.
But Ben, how great would it be? And I love Chuck Grassley, and Chuck Grassley is always my argument for when people call for term limits. He's like the godfather of the Senate.
He knows the Senate.
He
knows the Constitution.
I would pray that I would almost wish they would make him House Speaker, but at the same time, I also wish the Congress would allow him to do the questioning, because the way he speaks and the way he talks, anybody would, you know what, bricks, if Grassley was interviewing Hunter Biden, Ray, and all of those people.
That'd be great. That'd be so incredibly great. That's such a great idea.
Yeah, it would be, because, and this is no offense to the Jim Jordans of the world. Jim Jordan, I love him, but he doesn't have that temperament. And watching Grassley is like watching a Perry Mason, or he's like watching one of those older older shows where you just at the end you the person's like, I'm guilty. I'm just guilty. Okay, you got me, Grassley. I'm guilty of all of these things. But that's really my prayer. And I got to say, Ben, this isn't my prayer to watch America go down, but it is my prayer that the FBI and the CIA and the DOJ have accountability finally.
Makes America go up, not down.
No, you're completely right. And as we're closing up, Gabby, that's really my prayer, is that I don't want to keep having these discussions. So for once and for all, do an election. We bring this up on the show all the time. Robert Mueller had 2 years or 3 years, whatever, to have investigations. Sleepy Durham has taken God knows how long to do his investigations. And I always say, when they say they investigated election fraud, I always say, well, where? Like, where exactly was your, I want to see one piece of paperwork that says that an investigation was done. And I think it's important that you do these things, whether you believe in them or not, just so you can end this conversation that we're not having it in 2 years.
And then they'll do this. We could have an investigation tomorrow, and they'll cheat on the next one anyway. I mean, I keep wanting to say my wife, God bless her, world's most wonderful woman, world's most wonderful human being, period. She likes to say that the anti-Semitism is so deep-rooted that it's genetic. And I think that the behavior of politicians is so icky, as one might say, consistently decade after decade, that it's almost genetic. And I keep thinking about Nancy Pelosi's political family in my native state of Maryland, and I think to myself, boy, she really, blood is thicker than water, Nancy. Believe me, we get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I love now. All of a sudden, she's a married person, and Gabby, her future political decisions are based on a husband. That the only reason we even know he exists is because of his insider trading and the making of millions. Final thoughts, Gabby, as we're running out of time.
Well, she won't have the gavel come January, if we're going to go off of the results that are coming in. I think Republicans will have a slim majority, so she won't have the gavel. And I think she said her future may be up. And I think another report came out and said she only may serve 4 years as speaker, which I think has already hit the limit. So she won't be as influential, but whoever takes over as minority leader, we may have to worry about. So that's something to watch, but she won't be as powerful now with the Republicans taking over the House.
You know, you raise a great point, right? And I just think, I got to say, there's a great point you just brought up, because as much as we're running at them, as much as they like to say we're in fighting, Mandy, can you imagine when Nancy has to step down, the infighting between the squad and those anti-Semites and the rest of the House? Let the progressives, the left, and the liberals go at each other. They think we're fighting. That's, yeah, Ben, sorry.
I'm really humiliated by my own stupidity for not bringing up the fact that this country is facing a tidal wave of anti-Semitism, largely coming from African-Americans, and nobody even mentions it.
No, you know what's even more amazing is that, and I keep on bringing this up, is that every time they go to a black person about the Kyrie Irving, Kanye West, all these sorts of things, anti-Semitism, all they say, Gabby, and I'm sure you see this, is all they say, yeah, I don't condone it. They never say, and nobody ever says, what don't you condone? And none of them ever says, I don't condone anti-Semitism. Now, if it was homophobia, if it was transphobia, if it was Islamophobia, I could guarantee you they would be screaming, name it. Don't just say you don't condone. I don't want to leave you on that note. If you, but we do have, I'll give you everybody 30 seconds, Gabby, and then Mandy.
Anti-Semitism is bad. I've been on the receiving end of it. It's not fun. It should be wholly condemned, whether you're Republican, Democrat, celebrity or not celebrity. But yeah, for some reason they treat it as like something you cannot condemn, which is crazy. It's a problem. And if we don't learn from history, we could see horrible stuff take place again. And that's why we always hear the phrase never again. And people don't remember that. And kids are slowly forgetting what happened in the Holocaust, the atrocities that were unleashed, and similarly with the atrocities that were unleashed under global communism. So it's important to call out evil when evil is right in front of you.
And that's why it's important that people listen to the show, because Ben Stein always gets into discussion with that. And as we're seeing the evil exist, Mandy, of missiles going into Poland, I know a lot of people are going to go,
now by the says it didn't happen.
And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's a false flag. I don't believe it's a false flag. I just don't believe Russian equipment is that good. So the chances of a missile missing the Ukraine and hitting Poland with Putin's technology is very good. Mandy, last.
Yeah, look, I think just to add, the other thing that we're not allowed to talk about is violence against conservatives. And you've had instances where our justices of the Supreme Court, we talked about this last time, people show up to cause harm to them and their family, and that is equally suppressed in the media. So all violence is bad, whoever is on the receiving end of it, and those who deliver it, regardless of where they come from or what they look like, they should be held to account. And if we can reestablish that degree of accountability, I think the country will be on a much better track.
Well said, and that's why she's running for office, and everybody must vote Mandy Gunasekera. I got to say, I know I don't want to mention where, but I from the bottom of our hearts, I want to also thank your, I mean, not the, this, my, I want to thank your husband for putting up with us, because you come on nights when Ole Miss is playing. I know you're a huge football fan, and you're like the ultimate mother. You're the ultimate definition of feminism. And no, and I mean that from you. You are an amazingly strong woman, and God willing, one day you will be president. I know you probably have bigger political aspirations than what you're currently running for. You are the woman, both of you. Where can we find you, Gabriella?
All over social media. Too many social media things to list. But obviously my profile at Independent Women's Forum, I have a website, GabriellaHoffman.com. My podcast is called District of Conservation, where I talk about energy, wildlife, firearms, the great outdoors, and how it's been politically weaponized to against the people who go farming, hunting, fishing, and all that. And I try to be a defender of those in real America and in those flyover rural areas and all across the country, and kind of be a voice for them and explain policy with them. So District of Conservation is great. We had Mandy come on last week to analyze and forecast some elections. Our predictions did not come true, unfortunately. But I always bring on Mandy every quarter to talk about what's happening. And so it's a fun little platform. I've had it for 4 years, and it's anything about energy conservation, I try to deliver it to people on the news angle.
Perfect. And you can find me, you can join Truth. It will be helpful for us. And of course, Mandy, you can find her on Truth. You can find her all over. Mandy, give quickly, where could people find you?
Yeah, so you can find my policy work at IWF.org, and you can follow my campaign and learn more about the issues I'm going to be taking on at Mandy.ms.
Perfect. And of course, I want to thank everybody from the bottom of our hearts, BenStein.substack.com. Seriously, with the podcast numbers, from the bottom of our hearts, I don't even know how to thank you guys, the comments, everything. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for following Ben on Truth. We do this for fun and for free. And I will just, before I let Ben sing and only Ben sing, I just have to say, Gabby, you did great. It's I mean that. I love that you have different opinions. It's so important, because going forward, this is what we're going to have to. These are the crossroads that the Conservative Party is going to have to face. And I wish Ben Stein should be the person investigating everybody's motives for running. He should be investigating everybody's motives. I mean, for why are you doing this, and giving them history lessons of so many of these things, because he is America's humble servant. He's America's teacher. We couldn't do this without him. Ben Stein, you can find them at spectator.org. Of course, Newsmax all over. Ben Stein, please take us out.
We shall were in the land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. That I wish I was in Dixie. away in Dixieland. I'll take my stand to live and die in Dixie. Away down south, Dixie.
Perfect. God bless you all. God bless America. We will be back Thursday night. We will see everybody then. Again, thank you, Gabby Hoffman, and thank you, Mandy.
Thank you, Gabby.
God bless you all. God bless America, and God bless the world. Thank you.
God bless you.